What to the American slave is your 4th of July? Frederick Douglass asked that famous question 155 years ago this week in his speech, The Meaning of July 4th for the Negro. The 34-year-old former slave was by then a successful writer and an orator of international fame. In this speech, which he gave in New York to a crowd of 600, Douglass delivered a scathing rebuke of America. Douglass said the existence of slavery voided all the ideas of democracy and freedom this nation holds so high, especially on Independence Day. Here to talk about Douglass's speech is David Blight. He's a professor of American history at Yale University. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
So first, I want to get some more context on Douglass. It's the summer of 1852. Where was he in his life, and what was happening in the country that he might have been responding to?
Well, in 1852, Douglass was 34 years old. He had just moved from Massachusetts out to Rochester, New York. In his personal life, he was struggling to make ends meet. He had a young family with three children. He was publishing his own newspaper out of Rochester, which barely could stay afloat. But the nation at large was now in a deep crisis over the expansion of slavery, and particularly over the hated Fugitive Slave Act, hated at least by many Northerners and certainly by abolitionists.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the speech featuring the line that I mentioned a bit earlier.
What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is the constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty and unholy license, your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, a thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages.
So, Professor Blight, this is pretty strong language. And throughout the speech, Douglass doesn't hesitate to go after some sacred institutions, including the church and the government. How was he, a black man living in America during slavery, able to get away with saying things like that?
He pulls no punches. You're absolutely right. Note the use of the pronouns. You, your, you, your. It was Douglass deciding at that moment to confront his largely anti-slavery audience that day, and then the broader nation he hoped would read this speech, with the depths of American hypocrisy. He was invited by the Ladies Anti-Slavery Society of Rochester, New York. And in the beginning, they must have felt quite comfortable because he pays quite a tribute to the United States, to Jefferson, to the founders, to the Declaration of Independence. He calls the Declaration the ringbolt of American history. But about a third of the way into this speech, he then turns it into a litany of description, sometimes brutal, stark description of the slave trade, of auction blocks, of the most vicious of punishments of slaves, and he does not let up.
Well, Professor, we have a little bit of that section. Let's take a listen.
Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. I shall see this day and its popular characteristics from the slave's point of view, standing there identified with the American bondman making his wrongs mine. I do not hesitate to declare with all my soul that the character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on this 4th of July.
So when he talks about the American bondman or the slave, he as a free man is taking on the burden of the slave in America. Why do you think that he, who could have sort of passed on to a much more comfortable life, took on that burden?
Well, Douglass, in many ways, could not pass on to that more comfortable life, certainly not yet. He had been, of course, a fugitive slave from the day he escaped in 1838. At the time he gives this speech, he's only been out of slavery since he was 20 years old for 14 years. He was still a fugitive slave until 1847, 48. And Douglass was always and everywhere for the rest of his life, however famous he became, that former slave.
In the final section, he makes an appeal that is part carrot and part stick. Let's take a listen.
The existence of slavery in this country brands your republicanism as a sham, your humanity as a base pretense, and your Christianity as a lie. It makes your name a hissing and a byword to a mocking earth. It is the antagonistic force in your government, and yet you cling to it as if it were the sheet anchor of all your hopes. Oh, be warned, a horrible reptile is coiled up in your nation's bosom. For the love of God, tear away and fling from you the hideous monster, and let the weight of 20 millions crush and destroy it forever.
Just leave us with a couple words about how iconic he is today. I can't help but think of the portrait of him later in life with his mane of white hair. And there are probably people in this country who know his name and have seen that picture who don't really know very much about what he has done. And yet he is an icon of freedom, of humanity. Why has he stuck with us over time?
It's a great question. Douglass has become iconic in American classrooms and textbooks to a certain degree. He and Harriet Tubman, I think, are the principal images that are used, at least from the 19th century. But it's equally true that most Americans know very little about him. They may have seen a quotation on a placemat now. They've seen him as a kind of classroom cardboard cutout. But I think that has something to do with our continuing need in American society to believe that we have overcome slavery and racism and its aftermath. We want to believe we've solved this problem. But of course, a closer look at Douglass, a closer look at his own writing and his own speeches shows us that to the day he died, he never believed we had overcome this at all.
And yet his words live. Professor
they
Blight.
They surely do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
David Blight is a professor of American history at Yale University.